you for joining in once again and listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm chef and host Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host Aaron Howlett. Join us again as we go on another culinary adventure of the Comox Valley and beyond.
On this episode, we're heading to Comox to check out Tidal Cafe. All right, welcome to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. Hey, Darren.
Hi, John. So, yeah, thanks to everybody for listening and tuning back in.
Yeah, so we went for a bit of a car ride today. Me a little drive around Comox.
I did, yeah. I didn't mention it to our guests, but yeah, I grew up in this neighborhood, and so I hadn't been here for a couple of years, which is crazy. We only live 8 kilometers, 10 kilometers away. But I hadn't been here in years, literally. Yeah. And driving around, just looking at tons of new things going on in town and lots of hubbub in this particular little area. Yeah. So that's sort of what drew us out here.
Well, and now you need to introduce our guests.
Yeah, sure. We've got Blythe and Kurt from Tidal Cafe on... I'm not even sure what road this is.
We're on Port Augusta.
Port Augusta, thank you.
Which is the old name for Comox.
Just next to the...
Tuscano's.
And just up from the Blackfin.
And just up from the Blackfin.
And
around
right
the corner
Martin's.
From Martin's. Yeah.
This is so central. I mean, anybody knows any of those markers, they're going to know where to find you, for sure.
Yeah. Yes. Just down from Main Street and up from the marinas.
Yeah. So. And all those places are night places. So you guys have sort of come to the other end and done breakfast.
I think this used to be... typically a lunch place, morning and lunch.
Yeah, I remember a cafe being here beforehand that it was sort of geared towards lunch.
Yeah. Twisted dishes.
And then purple onion before that.
Yes. Twisted purple onion dishes.
Yeah. Yes. Gets a little confusing, but...
they were all good.
Yeah.
I was going to say, in your words, like, just describe your restaurant here and just to let our listeners know what you guys have here.
Well... it's mainly breakfast and brunch. Mm-hmm.
We really wanted to have great coffee, so we have locally roasted coffee from Red Tree. And we've got a liquor license, so we do breakfast cocktails and some local beer on tap. And got a new patio, but we really wanted to kind of emulate some of those great brunch restaurants in Victoria, because we think Comox needed a place like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Not just Victoria, too. I mean, we love brunch, and we've had brunch in so many Canadian cities. We drew inspiration. I think our initial idea was like, oh, we have to have brunches from every province and all these amazing dishes. And we kind of had to rein it in a bit.
Right.
And
it gets really, you can go way out there when you're dreaming up a restaurant.
Then you totally can.
Once you get in, you're like, oh, yeah.
But I think we did hang on to a bit of that international and coast-to-coast Canadian kind of influence. In the end, when we finally came to our
menu.
That's
great. And can you describe a bit or give some notes, maybe? Touch on a couple of dishes that would be sort of distinct? Maybe a little bit separating from what you would normally find in the Valley?
A classic cafe breakfast. Yeah. So if you've ever been to Newfoundland, and you get the Towton and the molasses and the baked beans and all these wonderful things with your eggs and toast, and we kind of... looked at an English breakfast as well and tried to bring those components in. I spent time at sea on a ship.
Oh, yeah.
In the Air Force. And those stewed tomatoes and the fried mushrooms and, you know, all these things that just scream happy breakfast time on a weekend morning if you're starving. So, yeah, that was one of our dishes that we kind of thought would be
fun
to have. Yeah, but we kind of reinvented it a little bit.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and then we've got our probably most popular dish is our ranchero bowl. So that's a little bit of our take on huevos rancheros. And that's definitely not, I guess, even Canadian, really. But we've got house-made bean patties on the bottom of a bunch of the vegetables and a chipotle crema and some abuelos tostado in there. So that's a really popular dish and delicious.
Kind of like breakfast tacos, but not. we had an issue with that at first because the way we did it at home was Costco bean patties. We still had the the corn tortilla on the bottom, but people were like, well, how are you supposed to cut that?
Right.
Not knowing that a tostada is actually finger food.
Right.
And so we kind of thought, well, what if we put it in a bowl and just stack everything on top of each other? Yeah. And then it's kind of like a cross between nachos and huevos, rancheros.
That's
so
great.
We still had all the components in there.
Right.
Just not quite in a way you might see it typically.
Well, that's great because I found that for a few years there, and we're going back a bit, but it seemed like the only breakfasts in town were all the same fare. So, yeah, it's great that you're putting a mark on your...
You're talking about the scrambled eggs with bacon and hash browns.
Which is still good, too.
Oh, it is. It's a classic, but you like to see other things.
Hangover breakfast, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I still like, the stewed tomatoes on there and all that fresh stuff.
Yeah.
Except we do the roasted tomatoes because we discovered just on our own, cooking at our own kitchen was just like, if you roast them a little bit, it just brings out all that flavor. Mm.
John would remember probably that back when we both worked at Atlas, whenever I had him making me up a bite to eat, I would always ask if he could throw some roast tomatoes on there. I absolutely love roast tomatoes on everything.
Oh, yeah, so. I'm so the same. Yeah. Even those little, like we've even taken those little tiny mini Romas, you know, and done those because must be roasted.
Oh, yeah.
great.
I joke that I like tomatoes on everything except oatmeal. So our oatmeal actually in our sweets section is that was inspired by a little restaurant in Calgary called Diner Deluxe, which is really kind of hip breakfast place. So it's a pan fried steel cut oatmeal. So we kind of cook the oatmeal a bit firmer and then pan fry it with butter.
Oh, nice.
And
get a little toastiness.
It comes in a skillet. Yeah.
Nice.
It's super sweet.
Quite yummy.
So what led you, did you have a history in food? What led you to opening the cafe?
I have a history of eating at restaurants.
Yeah.
It's always a good way to start. Yeah, when you know what you like when you go into a restaurant.
That's kind of what I thought. You know what I like, and I always know when it's not quite what I like. And but life does. She is more experienced.
I think when we first got married, we lived in Nova Scotia. We thought we wanted to have a bed and breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
And we had stayed at
the Inn at Bay Fortune,
where we got to eat food prepared by Chef Michael Smith.
That's when we were just food can be a sensory experience, not just like a fancy date was going to the keg.
Yeah.
I have to admit, he was one of the first chefs that really captivated me.
You've had the opportunity to work with him once or twice on an event.
I never actually worked directly with him, but through the Chefs Association, I know a bunch of people I have worked with have worked with him and just said nothing but outstanding things about him. But I remember he just had his cooking show. It was coming out when I was doing my apprenticeship. So it was like, I was like everything he did. But we always used to joke that everything he did was like a hockey puck. It was all circular.
I actually went and got some of those little forms.
Yeah.
Because I wanted it all to look exactly like that.
Yeah.
The terrines and the, you know, anyway.
Yeah, I think he inspired a lot of Canadians, actually. I think he was sort of there for us when... As a Canadian, as food was exploding, as it was becoming this sort of next chapter.
Even though he's from New York, but still, I think he's become a Canadian now.
But going into the garden and getting the herbs from the garden and bringing Prince Edward Island local food to his inn.
Yeah.
And so I think he was probably really avant-garde in that movement of getting more local food and... Even before the 100-mile diet.
That was, he sort of came out because I remember like Souk Harbor House down. They were one of the ones that really slow cooking. I remember it was slow cooking and they went, we got it slow. So why don't we get it from as close as possible? And I was like, that was like a real key to me. I'm like, oh yeah, this is kind of silly. And that's why I moved to Victoria during that time. And I realized that everything I was cooking in Victoria was coming from this region. So that's why I came back here.
We're super lucky here.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are so lucky. And we're still learning about all the suppliers and things. Like we knew I had an idea of what I could source locally because of managing up at Church Street Bakery.
Right.
Oh, right.
And so made some connections in the food industry from there. But there's so much out there every day that I hear about. And I'm just thinking, how can we put that in our menu? And with breakfast, it's tricky because breakfast is pretty limited in terms of...
Expectations. I don't think it's necessarily limited, but what people maybe expect is somewhat limited.
Exactly.
Well, and you're right about two expectations, not just what maybe they think they can eat for breakfast, but everyone wants their eggs a certain way. And we've just discovered that people are... they haven't eaten yet, so they're hungry and maybe hangry. And
we faced back again back in the Atlas days, even though I've served before and after. Just going to go back on that because it became such an issue for us where everybody wanted their eggs differently. And you have one kitchen, one area where the eggs are being made, and you've got 50 people, you know. And so it just became, hey, you know, I can appreciate that you have your own taste and distinct needs. We generally prepare them soft yolk, firm white. Is that acceptable?
Okay.
And most of the people went for that.
Yeah.
You'd have the few that were like, no, I need them hard. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
And so when we developed our menu, that was what we said. I was like, you know what? These kids on the line here are going to have a meltdown. So we have 36 inches of grill, and then we have some pans. We'll put it on the menu that it comes with scrambled eggs. If people don't want scrambled eggs, they'll know to ask. 9 times out of 10, it's scrambled.
That's for the bowls, yeah. And of course, Benny's are all poached the same way unless people specify.
Yeah.
And then for the most part, it really works.
That was exactly a big thing for us, too. And for me, I travel with work with WestJet and often go places where I'm dying for breakfast and I'm on a West Coast time zone and breakfast is closed already. Right. It's like, you can't just make some eggs? No, that whole part of the kitchen is shut down or whatever, cleaned. And so we want to make sure you can have breakfast all day.
Well, on smaller kitchens, too, like that grill space gets cleaned after breakfast and then that's now covered in ingredients for lunch. Like like you can't just turn it back on, you know? It's in use for other things.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that you had worked at WestJet. I used to also work for WestJet.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Cool.
Are you using your WestJet voice?
No. I've had this voice for a while.
Well, this may be a great point to get a little bit of your history, like how you guys got into the food industry and where you're from originally. And... Yeah, how you came to town.
We just knew that if we didn't start a brunch place, somebody else would.
and we'd regret it forever.
But I was at Church Street. When we first were looking at moving here, Church Street Bakery was for sale.
Oh,
and we thought, wow, we should buy that bakery.
Right.
And we even had a little name. We call it Bake, Blythe and Kurt Eatery. Yeah. Ooh, but they had that wood fire oven.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we've made pizza at home.
Yeah, no, that's John's dream is to have a wood fire oven for cooking.
Keeps kiboshing it. We finally bought a big green egg, and that's kind of...
Yeah. Sorry. Ooh, was that a product placement?
Sorry, a Kamado grill.
From Rainforest. I started working there, just front-end bread slinger. It was so local, and everything was homemade and natural, fresh ingredients. Just so in that at our house and in our family, that's a huge philosophy for us: is everything's made from scratch. Our boys were so spoiled growing up because I cooked, and I think I was there for about 5 years.
Wow,
a long time. And then I retired, air quotes here.
Yeah.
And that was the first time we saw this place was coming up. This space. At that point, it was right after Twisted Dishes had shut. We came in and had a look around with the landlords, and I think at that point in our life we were still quite busy with our kids.
We had no experience
really running whatsoever.
A restaurant at all. So I was leaning on Blythe, and if she wasn't into it, it wasn't happening. Right. And the kitchen was inadequate.
It was a lot. And so we thought, well.
So then the social room came here, and was put into
cocktail bar.
It was kind of cool, actually. Yeah. But they did all these renos, like the brick wall, and made a full commercial kitchen in the back, which we should show you after.
I mean, it's beautiful. I haven't seen the space in that time, so I was really impressed when we walked through it.
Did their research on it, I think, like spacing wise to maximize how many seats you could get in here and things like even to the 24 by 24 inch tables. The bar have exactly enough room for a server to walk by. Not if somebody stops to chat with their neighbor.
Right.
But it worked. So we kind of just kept the layout because there was really no way to reinvent it.
But we definitely changed the feel a lot. Like this was a high bench you're sitting on now.
It was all bar height.
The windows were tinted and there's no art on the wall. So and then we've made this kind of nook up there with the little pony walls.
Yeah, we put the sound dampers up so that
And changed the paint and brightness, and we had those doors made to go into the kitchen. And
well,
so,
it looks really pretty.
Thanks.
Yeah,
actually, most of the stuff is local too. Like a local guy built our doors. Those are our starfish are all from Philberg. Of course, Marianne and Horning's art on the wall.
Her art's
and
amazing.
Jason Furstenberg.
Yeah. Jason Furstenberg did that drawing.
Our neighbor's daughter, Maddie Elia. And we just try to do as much, even not just with the food, but right. with all the craftsmen influence as well.
Just to showcase our beautiful community.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's so much
here
talent
is amazing.
Here.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. great. So then, back to the question.
Yes.
I went back to Church Street and managed it full time. And I learned a lot about how all that works with sourcing and ordering right. and creating relationships in the community. This came up again.
Yeah,
that, our neighbor, we bumped into him in the grocery store one day, and he's like, you know, I have a feeling that your space that you wanted to rent is going to be available again.
Oh, really?
So,
so this time everything
like,
had changed. It
yeah,
had been
everything
renovated.
Was different.
She
yeah.
now had experience, you know,
right.
dealing with suppliers and ingredients and schedules and all of that. That would be like way... As you know, there's so much going into
oh
this.
My goodness. And so still, like we said, we're
year.
Still learning so much every day.
I'm going to say, like, I went from managing, you know, one of the busiest restaurants in the Comox Valley wow. to opening yeah. my own little ice cream shop. And it was like, there was a huge eye opening of all these little extra things. Like, I knew how to do schedules and ordering, but there's so much more in a restaurant.
Because something breaks.
It's amazing.
Something
yeah.
leaks. And
well, setting up for this, I always thought the most stressful thing we'd ever done is a move, and we'd move many times when we were in the military, and that's huge. And this made a move look like a trip to the grocery store, you know?
Oh,
like,
man.
It was just...
Right.
All the licenses, all the checks, all the...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Setup of the inside, the staff,
accounts
the food, yeah,
that
you guys,
set up.
We don't
and
need
it's just,
to tell
yeah.
you, but...
Talking to the government and getting all your permits and all that
yeah,
stuff. Yeah,
so like, much. And everything, even, you know, just to get our sign hung, it's just
oh yeah
yeah
every little detail.
People always wonder why do you charge so much for food, and I'm like, well, you have to do this and this and this
yeah,
and this
yeah.
and this and this and
I know
you ever paid for a
yeah
refrigeration guy to come in or a plumber on a long weekend?
Yeah. I know, and holding your breath every day when you check yeah. your fridge temperatures.
Yes. yeah, yeah. Please be four.
I know. Or else, why is that one at -2 right now?
yeah.
I don't want my tomatoes to be frozen.
Oh, yeah. man. But that, and we know, speaking of that, the cost, just we want people are spending their hard-earned money, so we want to deliver, you know, amazing food, great service, really great atmosphere, and you kind of got to get all three of those before people
yeah.
feel like it's a great dining experience.
And then you also have to deliver value. For
yeah, and value,
to,
of course.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, for people to...
Yeah.
And we have Smitty's right there.
Right.
So we had to be sure that we were not emulating Smitty's, but
right. mm-hmm.
not also making people go to Smitty's because of our price point. You know, we also have Bonino Gelato right up there who makes these beautiful Belgian waffles. Yeah. And we're like, well, we want them to be there just as much as they, you know, as we want us to be here. So... Yeah, in our development too, we didn't want to have too many things for us to do. We thought, okay,
right.
that's a different
yeah.
station. They can do the waffles,
it's,
but we do have their ice cream.
It's
Sorry,
oh yeah.
gelato.
Funny when they were doing their expansion, I was looking at doing crepes in my little shop.
Oh yeah,
and
right.
then I heard that they were doing crepes. I'm like, well, I can't do crepes.
and isn't it funny how we all kind of
the
think like that?
Really
you want
to like that too? Yeah, everyone wants each other to succeed because it makes it better for all of us.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
I always
totally.
Like. Actually, I have to say it's Renald St. Pierre. I loved he always says to me, he's like, why all fight for the same piece of pie when we can just make a bigger pie?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, yeah.
yeah. So I love that analogy, and I kind of always think about that with this community and
yeah.
and how we can all get a little bite of it and just make it a happier place.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's amazing how this place is becoming a food destination.
I know.
I love that. Just a destination in general. We've got amazing businesses popping up in Comox.
Yeah. yeah.
Absolutely.
As in Darren was like, this is new.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Look, you can even do a Comox pub crawl almost.
Yeah,
yeah.
really? Yeah. Plan and we've got our beer from New Tradition, and Pat and Tammy are wonderful, and that's kind of a fun place to go after work. And then there's the Church Street Tap House, of course, which is really hopping. And,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I lied. Actually, you and I went to New Tradition a few weeks ago for a beer just to check it out.
That's right.
I totally forgot. I have been to Comox in the last few while. Yeah. I just wasn't paying attention.
they've been huge supporters of us, and even during COVID, our whole community, we had, even when we opened for takeout, we had a whole bunch of regulars that still come. And we've made some nice new, almost friends, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about COVID? Like, how has that affected you?
That was my next question.
Like, what did you have? I mean, I think we've talked to enough people to know what everybody had to go through to adjust, but how did it affect you, or how did you were you able to roll with the punches? And
I'll just first say that it was overwhelming starting a restaurant, and finally that felt like, it's funny, your memory of pain is so short. We're like, oh yeah, we started a restaurant, but at the time it was just like we're climbing Mount Everest, and so finally we're running, and then 4 months into it we got to shut down, so rethink it. And then we had to get our heads wrapped around takeout and figure that out, and now it's about reopening. But Blythe is on top of all these procedures we've had to follow. She's the manager.
I think early on, I'm kind of one of those people who watches the news and always have this little seed in my mind of something's going to happen. So I remember first hearing about this weird virus way back in January.
Yeah.
And so, and then when Family Day happened, a whole bunch of people got a weird cold or flu or something. Mm-hmm. And a few of our staff even were off sick. And it was shortly after that, because that was, what was it, February 17th. So maybe a month later. And we'd already been sanitizing things that we didn't normally sanitize. Like anything somebody touches, I want you to clean it. And I remember it was Monday the 16th, and he'd just gotten back the day before, and the whole thing was coming to a head. And I told my staff, I said, today I want you to close like you're going to be closed for a long time.
Really?
And I remember that feeling and just thinking, this is really...
Heavy,
And not... trying just not to go there, or try not to panic too much.
Yeah.
And I gave them the speech about, it's okay, we're going to talk to the accountants, you're probably going to be laid off, but the government's going to have help for everybody, so we're all in the same boat, just sit tight. And we maintain communication with the staff and everything like that. So that's kind of where we sat for several weeks. And you know the BCRFA, the BC Restaurant Food Service, they had these conference calls once a week, which we jumped onto and learned a lot from them. And just on knowing that we weren't the only ones going through this, Martine's and the Blackfin and locals, they were all on there. And so I think that that kind of built a little bit of solidarity, and knowing that Ian was working hard on the restaurants of British Columbia's behalf to get guidelines for us in case we could ever reopen. And
I think that's something a lot of people don't know, like how much work was going behind.
So what can we
do to reopen to make it safe for people
and make people feel comfortable?
Because they knew that, you know, no matter what happened, like people are not going to feel 100% comfortable. What's the best we can do, and what can we present the government before they just give us something that's unreasonable? And be like this is what we can do with our establishments.
We were so impressed with that organization and what it did, and it just felt great to feel like we're a little part of it too, you know?
And those questions, you know, like if we open up again and get shut down again, there's a huge expense of buying all that food and getting everyone back up to speed, and then having to shut and throw it all
out. You
want to
make sure you get it right the first time.
Marcus at Martine's kept saying that he'd rather open a few weeks too late than a few weeks too early and have to close again, because that'd be tough.
And I think early when they started coming out with some procedures you could do for the takeout, we had to reinvent ourselves 100%, because how do we translate our menu, which is breakfast, to a takeaway menu,
like
without compromising our quality, so that people aren't like, oh, I've heard such good things, what could be wrong?
Why are my eggs all hard?
Why is my hollandaise separated or congealed?
That's another thing I think that I don't think that a lot of people know, the general public or customers know, that if you see a menu, people will often see a menu and say, for your takeout menu, I love this from your menu, why isn't it on your takeout menu? And it's generally because it does not travel well.
Right.
And by the time it gets home, its quality is compromised.
Yeah.
Poached eggs and hollandaise.
Yeah, we didn't. So none of our Bennies.
None of our Bennies. So I did a lot of research and trial and error, and we finally found a nice compromise of a mock hollandaise.
Oh yeah.
That it worked for the unbenny biscuit, which is still our house-made buttermilk biscuit, and
instead of a poached egg, it's just sort of medium fried,
so the yolk still runs down your
chin.
We always have to warn people so they don't get it on their shirt.
Right.
This one woman who's a regular, we felt so bad. She took a bite, and it just all over her shirt.
That's my dilemma. Every time I do a sandwich like that, I'm like, I wear half of it.
Come with a bib. And
yeah, that's
it. But yeah, and then we had a food truck inspiration, like, how are we going to put that classic cafe breakfast between two pieces of bread so that people can just eat it with their fingers? So we managed that. And
we have our one breakfast sandwich on a regular menu, which is
that's true.
Awesome. Yeah. We tried to invent the best breakfast sandwich we could based on other ones. And then we created three more for the takeout menu.
Oh, yeah.
Which is still available, but we don't
really promote it.
We don't do those inside, do we?
Sometimes
sandwiches.
Sometimes it's a little tricky with timing when the restaurant's full and someone wants takeout. And it's like, well, that'll be an hour for your breakfast.
Absolutely.
And we were lucky. Our son came home. I mean, he had to come home from university because everything shut down for COVID.
Of course.
So he had experience as a baker and from Church Street. Okay. And so he came in and we hired back one of our young line cooks.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta love to have family in the
industry. Yeah. Nice because it was just two households.
Yeah.
And I knew that the one line cook, he lived with his grandmother, so he was very careful.
Right.
So following the protocols for all the sanitizing and contact tracing were relatively easy in that regard.
But then when we had to spool up for reopening inside, I was a bit reluctant to get back into that because we had 42 seats in here, and then it looked like we could maybe put 14 in, which wasn't going to work.
Oh, yeah.
No.
So now we figured that instead of that, if you go from person to person, we can kind of do 4-2-4 here, and then we just put that screen up in the nook so that that'll allow us to use both of those booths, and it's been a huge help from the town to get the park lit out there. So we've got four tables outside now, and that's great, at least for the summer.
Approval from the BC Liquor Board to have our liquor license extended out there temporarily, of course, but everything.
Fantastic.
I'm actually, I got to be proud about some of the governments, boards.
They've
really been like, you know, like we had really strict laws, like some ridiculous laws, like
almost draconian. I used to own a bar, and the amount of bureaucracy. So this is a standard joke.
Is this a rant?
No, but
is this a rant?
The amount of bureaucracy in getting anything done, adjusted, anything to do with it has just, you know, for years and years. And not only did I own a bar, but I ran three other bars before that. You know, it was just a constant struggle. And honestly, I am blown away at how quickly and assuredly that they responded to what's going on. Just lifted a whole bunch of restrictions that were, you know, weren't really there for any reason to allow people to make money and get through this. And I thought that was fantastic. And I was really surprised.
And wouldn't it be amazing if out of this comes a realization that if you allow people to drink in public, the whole world's not going to go crazy. I think Kurt always says it's better. It should be, you know, drunken disorderly behavior will not be permitted, but not
who cares what you consume.
I mean, that's just because I put a rope there. Does that mean?
I agree. And I travel a lot for work and had ever since WestJet. I find that it seems really here where we promote the heck out of our food and being a food destination, but you can't have drink to go with it. Like that's where all the restrictions are. And it just seems so strange when I go to all these other places and they're very much, you know, so much more lax.
Yeah, more progressive, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
And none of them seem to have any big issues with, you know, it all seems to be under control.
Yeah, it's an adult thing to do to have a beer or a glass of wine with your meal. And even if it's a picnic from a food truck, why should that be any different, right?
Yeah. And I mean, that's why we put a drinking age, because that's when you're mature enough to be able to handle it, right? Yeah. So
some people.
Theoretically, right?
Yeah, for men, it should be 40. Yeah.
I got a few names I can make. But no, it's nice just to open it up and, you know, be responsible about it. And I think it's up to restaurants to maintain it. And as long as we take responsibility and make sure our clients are respectful of everyone, I think it's a great thing for all of us.
Yeah. It is.
It's funky sometimes though to think about all the tourists that come in and it's like, where are you from?
Yeah.
And to not have that judgment, but still... Yeah. Kind of be like,
well, I know. I mean, we're really lucky that right now there's no new cases in BC and haven't been for a while. Or sorry, on Vancouver Island and haven't been for a while. And you know, how long can we keep that going? I don't know how long we can keep it going. I don't know what we do, but it seems like we're doing the right things.
Mm. Yeah,
I did have a question about your takeout over the time. Was it profitable for you, or was it just?
Profitable is relative, because we're pretty new,
right?
And we're not paying full rent right now, and not paying full salary to our employees. So
I think it was better than being closed for sure. Yeah, we kind of, and we're only 3 days a week too. So then we started thinking we better do takeout 5 days a week. But then they opened up to we could open up inside again. So
I'm going to go onto social media now because I've definitely noticed your presence in social media through like Instagram and Facebook and all
Speaking of the learning curve, that's one more thing. We've had a lot of help just last few months from Danica McDowell from Edible Vancouver Island, just working with us on social media, and that's been huge.
She's been amazing.
It's just so much to know, and then you're like, should I post this or when? And you know, if the picture good enough, and will anyone even see it?
There's so much to think about.
Will it even translate to more customers? But I think people are getting to know a little bit about us on there. So that's one kind of marketing, and it's
We love her photography she does for you.
Yes.
Yeah, Blue Spruce, those are awesome. And she's done some great ones for us, too, for a takeout. So we're trying to arrange a time for her to take some shots.
I have to say, like, when she first came to town and she introduced herself to me, we went out for breakfast, and she took a shot of the breakfast. And I was literally like, oh, my God, her photo looks better than the breakfast I remember.
Right?
I was like, that is amazing. Yeah. And so I had it in my head. I'm like, if I ever do anything, I'm going to give her a call.
Yeah.
You know? And nice. So, yeah, when I got Open Blue Spruce and myself and Kirsten, she was like, we don't need someone like this. She's like, it's really expensive. I'm like, no. Let's just bring her in. We'll get a bunch of, you know, a couple photos to start the business. Anyways, next thing I know, she's coming in every 2 or 3 months, you know, to do a whole
other thing.
The ice cream. The ice cream is amazing.
And it was just like taking these photos and just making them, you know, just showcasing us.
The
and
deconstructed ones.
I love her thought process. And she's been working with Darren.
I actually met her at a dinner party at your house. And then we loosely connected, not closely connected. Maybe I actually met her through a podcast first. I don't know. It was something. But during the shutdown, I have a small catering business that wasn't catering, obviously. And I got to, I just sat down and started writing recipes down for my kids, and it became a cookbook, and it became a series of cookbooks.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I started taking some really, really amateur photos. Mm-hmm. She jumped in and was like, hey, you should try this and you should adjust that. And so she's sort of, she's like not necessarily taking me under her wing, but she's been incredibly helpful in getting me going in that way. And every once in a while checking in and just seeing if I've, you know, how I've upped my game. I'm still working on it, but I'm getting there. So
I'm getting a little nervous. She's kind of about to let us fly solo because she's getting into another busy project.
I think she's taking on fully social media for Edible.
Oh, wow.
Vancouver Island.
We're part of a couple of not-so-private Facebook groups. She's brought me into a few just to share some food photography and her, speaking of upping game, like, she's always been incredible, but she has gone next level lately. Like, her... She's got before it used to be very focused on one subject, but now like every photo tells a story. It's incredible.
So I guess the next question is, what does the future hold for you? Do you have big plans of changing anything or just getting it back up and going again? And
we want to be a national franchise. No, I'm
just kidding. Is there a little thing there?
No, I don't think so. We're just really happy that now Comox is a great breakfast place for that we can't go to because we're always working.
I know. And then Tuesdays and Wednesdays are our days off, and everything's also shut.
It was really funny what you said about, well, you haven't been to Comox for a while. Like it's really no big deal for us to go to Courtney, but it is a big deal. And this is sort of the same the other way around. And we feel like we got this, but
I it's personal in that I lived here just up until a few years ago, and I would have to drive to Courtney and back 3 times a day.
Oh, I see.
And so it was 1 hour when you take 3 trips there, 3 trips back into account every day. Mm-hmm. And after that, so that was 3 years. And after that, I was like, I don't have to go back there, and I'm not going to for a while. Yeah. And that, like, I love Comox. I grew up here, but yeah.
It's so funny how when we lived in Calgary, it was, we'd have to take our kids to basketball games and drive for an hour, or soccer game, and it's just...
I complain, and yet my sister, you know, she lives in Maple Ridge, and her son is semi-pro football and has to be in Burnaby, and then the next day in Richmond, and then whatever, and she works in New West, and I'm like, oh, so you're on the road 2 to 3 hours a day. She's like, minimum.
Yeah, and here if we have to wait for a light, for 2 lights, we're like... Whoa.
Rush minute, yeah.
Yeah.
But as far as the future goes, I think we just want to be sustainable.
Right.
So we're having fun, and so we can, you know, just keep a place for people to come and enjoy a great breakfast or brunch,
right,
and have a great place for our staff to work. And as long as we can keep it sustainable, that's our goal right now. It's kind of a 5-year plan.
That's
then
good.
We decide if we renew the lease or what goes after that. But
well, generally, when we talk to everybody, everybody either wants to, you know, open multiple locations, or they want to get into a bigger unit or what have you. But sometimes people just want to improve and develop and see where it goes.
Yeah,
we're so new.
Well,
we're so
new. Like I've got a friend who works at WestJet as well, and he's opened a whole bunch of breakfast restaurants in Winnipeg called Stella's. And I was talking to him about this when we first thought, and he said people come to him and say they want to open a restaurant, and he said, well, why? And they say, well, I think it'd be a great way to make some money or a great investment. He said, if you're doing it for the money, there's way better ways to make money.
Yeah.
But he said, if you love the look on people's face when they enjoy your food,
then maybe
you should look into it.
This is a people-pleasing business. And if you don't like that, if you can take that hangry person and turn that around and put a big smile on as they walk out the door.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what we're in the business of, because it's not just breakfast, because a lot of people do that, but we're kind of in the business of comfort and happiness, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And for us, that's enough.
Yeah, that's great.
And breakfast is so easy. If you want to take your significant other on a date, it's less expensive than supper, and your kids are at school, so you don't have to get a babysitter, which is awesome.
Yeah.
No, that's the perfect way to go. Nice cup of coffee.
I know.
Yeah.
And a Caesar.
A little Caesar to spice it up in the morning.
Mimosa,
yeah.
It's been great chatting with you, but I thought maybe we should just give our listeners a little bit of some details about where you are, how to check you out, all that social media fun stuff. So our location here, we're on Port Augusta Street.
146 Port Augusta, right beside Toscano's.
Just up from
the marina.
And just up from the marina.
It's a breakfast by the bay.
Yeah. Our website is titlecafe.ca, and we're on Instagram and Facebook. Yeah, you can email us at breakfast@titlecafe.ca.
And how do people get in touch with you for takeout if they're going to do takeout?
Oh, yeah, phone.
Yeah.
So the phone number is on the website, but it's 250-890-9537. And we do takeout still on the days we're open, which is Thursday to Monday from 8 till 2.
Perfect.
Tuesday or Wednesday is our weekend for sanity.
Everybody needs those.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with us today.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for the opportunity. It was a really great experience.
I'm looking forward to finally getting over here and having some breakfast.
No pressure.
I've been talking about it like the whole, like since you guys opened, we heard about it, and it was like, oh, this new breakfast place, I gotta go try it out. And I love breakfast, like you said, like coming in having some eggs Benedict,
anything with hollandaise,
exactly.
The most important meal of the day,
exactly. A nice cup of coffee, like you guys got the local coffee here, so okay, I'm going
good feedback
there.
On our coffee for sure.
And then all of a sudden, COVID comes. I'm like, oh.
We're super careful here. Every rule that comes out, we follow. Yesterday was the first time we had someone refuse to give their contact information.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I've seen a lot of blowback in that. But for the most part, people are starting to understand that's how we nip this in the bud, is by being able to track. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything.
And it's not about them. It's about if something happens, we would like
safety.
To let you know.
And we're restaurants. We're not giving that information to anyone else.
No, we're throwing it away after 30 days.
We got enough junk sitting around in there. You're always looking for another corner to tuck that one extra case of potatoes.
But that's the thing. It's not for us. It's for them.
Yeah, exactly.
In case something happens, then we'll be able to let them know.
Yeah, we have. I don't think any restaurant has an interest in going through that list. Are you coming back for dinner?
No. I would just be handing it over to the lovely Bonnie Henry and saying, here you go.
Please. All right. Well, thank you so much again.
Thanks again, you guys.
Right. Thanks.
And now we'd like to take a chance to thank you for supporting us and the Edible Valley podcast. And more importantly, supporting the people that make up our food community. We are so happy for you to be listening to us. And we'd like you to help us in any way possible by helping to share the stories of the people in our industry, the food they're creating, and the wonderful things they're doing. There's lots of ways you can check us out. You can always check out our Facebook at the Edible Valley Podcast, our Instagram at the Edible Valley, and don't forget our website, theediblevalley.com. If you know anyone who's out there who has a story, or you just want to tell us a story of your own, you can always email us at theediblevalley@gmail.com. Also, if you have time, don't forget to write a review and pass along to your friends. And as always, thanks again for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.